104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with a big story of the day.
They do bring some pressure. Locke trying to throw over the top of that. Finds the receiver. Has the time. Middle up, a touchdown. Mizzou. Big trouble here. He's going to take off. Just down the five.
Welcome to Denver, Drew Locke. I hope you get a nice view. I hope you enjoy your lunch or dinner, because this is likely the only time you're going to be here. So
you don't know that.
It's D-Mac with Chad Brown. Well, I don't know that, I guess. My man Mike Evans is just freaking out. He's freaking out.
Are you and Mike Evans contractually obligated to mention each other?
No. I'm in a much more calm position than Mike and Mark. They don't know what to do with themselves under this potential situation. First of all, they're just flabbergasted when listeners bring up to them, this is a trend. You get a bridge quarterback and you draft a younger guy to develop, and then you hand it over to the younger guy.
That's fake news.
Right. They are stunned that this has been going on. They just can't imagine. It's funny. It's comical to listen to, because this is the genesis of the Glennon Trubisky doctrine, which says when you don't have a quarterback, you should continue to try to find one that you can have for a long time at a cheap price.
Right.
It doesn't matter what you pay the older guy, because there's a quarterback budget with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you do that, you are best off. I know, this is shocking. Ready? You take the best quarterback you can find. And when you take the best quarterback you find, you draft that quarterback as high as possible, because we know through freaking ridiculous amounts of analytics, your odds of success, the higher you draft a quarterback, are better than if you wait.
Correct.
It's not that there are exceptions to the rule.
There's always outlying examples.
Of
always.
Course. But if you want to look at the numbers, the evidence is overwhelming. So, Drew Locke is here. They went and worked out Daniel Jones. They're going to bring in Kyler Murray. Who else? Who else am I thinking? Oh, Dwayne Haskins is like dropping like a rock in terms of the vibe on him.
You know my feelings. I've been clear about my feelings since the very beginning on Dwayne Haskins.
Well, restate, please.
Again, I called the Ohio State-Purdue game. It was his worst game of the year. But I think you can learn a lot about a player in their worst game.
Well, what'd you learn?
I learned some bad tendencies, the inability to process. If you're going against a hot defensive back who's continuing to win the matchup against your receivers, why would you keep going in that direction? One Purdue defensive back had 5 passes broken up in the game.
Mm.
If it's the NFL, it could have been 4 or 5 interceptions.
Right.
Because the kid from Purdue wasn't like a lights out prospect as far as the cornerback. He was just a good college player.
Yep.
And he knew what was coming, and he was defending that. So for Dwayne Haskins to be talked about as potentially the number one, most likely the number two quarterback ranked in this draft class.
Yep.
Those kind of mistakes were just, it doesn't match up. You're the number two quarterback. You're possibly a top 5 pick, but you don't know where to go with the football. You cannot recognize the trend. You cannot decide to go away from a certain player. You are so slavish to the play design, you can't fix it. And he was in that, he had a lull late season, mid to late season, where his footwork got awful. This was probably the worst game of that example.
Mm-hmm.
So he got away from his fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about that performance said, oh man, this kid's a top 5 pick. Nothing.
Okay, so you're not really surprised to hear the dropping like a stone of Dwayne Haskins.
Not at all.
Doesn't shock you at all.
Not at all.
Now, here's what's kind of interesting. The Washington Redskins. The Washington Redskins, Chad, are perfectly positioned for the Glennon Trubisky doctrine. Perfectly positioned. It was funny listening to Mike today, because he was like, well, why didn't we just, if we were going to do this, why not just keep Case Keenum? And I was like, duh, right? It's what I've been saying for like a year and a half. Right, Mike. I'm glad some things are like finally clicking in here. Oof.
But even
why don't they just wow? What an incredible idea!
But
wow.
Even if you're under the bridge scenario, doesn't Joe Flacco present a better option than Case Keenum under the bridge?
They're
scenario?
Not drafting a quarterback. Oh my God, this is a total. We've talked about it.
Right.
This is the QB mist. This is they're going to go to the land of the magic mushrooms in the fifth round and beyond. Like today, I saw. Jarrett Stidham mocked in the fifth round. There you go. Perfect. Magic mushrooms. Maybe something incredible will happen. But probably not. But that's where they're going to go.
Sometimes those magic mushrooms do turn to unicorns.
Occasionally.
You get a power up. You get that Mario Brothers sound.
And then Mike is saying, look at Jimmy Garoppolo. And I'm like, yeah, that wasn't a plan. The plan didn't work. They traded Jimmy Garoppolo. And he was a second-round guy anyway, Mike. He was – once you go to guys in the second round, you're just really looking for backups. That's all. Break glass in case of emergency. Beep, beep. Backing up. That's it. That's all you ever are at the best. You're not a real plan. If Jimmy Garoppolo is a real plan, Chad, they just would have kept signing him. It doesn't matter because guys like Jimmy G kind of come out year after year after year. And we'll see how good he is with San Francisco. If he can stay healthy and really produce, we don't know.
He was dynamic in those two seasons ago. He was
we'll
amazing.
See. We'll see. Maybe he's fantastic. But it certainly wasn't a plan. You know, it's not what the Patriots... It was a mistake. You know what? In all honesty, drafting Jimmy Garoppolo, using a second-round pick on Jimmy Garoppolo, was actually a mistake by the Patriots.
How so?
Because they could have got a contributing player with that pick, and they could have been a fine in the backup with the Brian Hoyers of the world. They didn't need Jimmy Garoppolo there.
Well, that's way too revisionist history. That's way too hindsight 2020. You got an older quarterback... You've got to have somebody in
Brian Hoyer
who can actually go out and win games for you.
Yeah, but when Tom Brady's at the end of the road with Tom Brady, you need to tank it. You need to, you know, bottom out.
Why? They got Tom Brady in the sixth round.
Because you
got
to get your next guy.
Okay,
it's fine. If you think your next guy is one of these beep beep backups, Magic Mushroom Land, Tom Brady Part 2, fine. I'll roll my dice with, like, getting somebody who, you know, is... You know, good. And I'll take my chances from there.
Okay.
But here's what's interesting today with, you know, Peter King was funny. He came out, Chad, with like, here's what should happen. And like in the here's what should happen scenario with Peter King, mm-hmm. like 12 teams trade back. I'm like, yeah, well, okay. Of course you should trade back if...
Everyone would love to trade back.
You would always love to trade back.
But you need a trade partner to do that.
Right. But if you have an opportunity to trade back and you don't, like, you're not a top three pick. Like, there's nobody like Von Miller right there. Uh-huh. There's nobody like Andrew Luck right there. Okay? You're insane if you don't trade back to get two first-round guys when you need it. Insane. And sure enough, that's what the Broncos had last year, Chad. They had a chance. They could have traded back with the Bills and gotten two first-round picks. Insane not to do that. But that's what you do. So you have to create this whole concept, Chad, that for the this is all about the Washington Redskins, by the way. Because I don't think Miami is going to be desperate. I think Miami is more in a kind of rebuild for the long-term sort of mode. With who they have as their coach, Flores is a first-year guy. I don't think they're going to be desperate to move from 13 to 10, for example. It really is about the Redskins at 15. And they have Case Keenum, and Alex Smith has, you know, now a leg and a half, and, you know, I don't know how that's going with them. Probably not great. And so you have the Washington Redskins in almost the same exact scenario the Broncos were last year. You got to hope if you're the Broncos, you can find a trade partner with the Washington Redskins. So you really got to put on the act. You really have to do the old soft shoe here to make them believe you're truly interested in a quarterback. And the Broncos are doing a good job with it.
You think the every single possible quarterback candidate, bringing them in and working them out, That's a convincing smokescreen?
It's the best you can do, but they're doing more than that. They're feeding information to journalists.
Right.
You're seeing, like, you know, Todd McShay mock Drew Locke.
Right.
They're feeding. I saw Jeff Legwald wrote something the other day. I mean, they're feeding
Drew Locke, Walter Football. I've seen the mocks. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're
at some point, you go so overboard, it feels completely transparent. You're doing six quarterbacks?
Is it six? Well, they're bringing four. Wait. They talked to Stidham, right?
Mm-hmm.
They like Clayton Thorson. And then the big four. Yeah, they're six so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That feels a little bit overboard.
Of course.
You're even doing Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of silly, too. But this is they're showing appropriate amounts of desperation. You get 30 visits. I mean, so what?
I have not taken part. I've taken part in lots of football insider discussions. I have never taken part in the smokescreen discussion and looking at the draft board and saying, okay, the Redskins are probably going to want a quarterback at 13. How do we convince them? Let's bring in every quarterback in the draft. Well, it just seems a little absurd to me.
That's where they're at. Unless what would be stunning is if the Broncos this year did what's logical. The logical thing for the development of the program, Chad, and not in a win-now mode, absolutely is to take a quarterback at 10 this year. Absolutely. Because you're going to get great value for your quarterback, and usually you'd have to have a top five to get one of the top two quarterbacks, and this year you don't. I don't think. But then again, the candidates are underwhelming at best.
Right.
Yeah. I gotcha. So I'm not banging the table saying you got to do it like last year, where it was so much more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, here's what the Redskins may do. They may give up their first-round pick for Josh Rosen. And in all honesty, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't the Redskins just say, well, this is just the draft all over again. Which quarterback do we like the most? And this is kind of a no-brainer. And here's why they got to do it. I mean, maybe unfortunate for them. There's already second-round picks on the table for Rosen, and the Cardinals are hanging in there.
Uh-huh.
So forget about third-round picks for Rosen. That's, you know, there was scuttlebutt about that a while ago. That's gone.
I think that was to get the conversation going. They don't want to start too high. They recognize there'd be a number of quarterback-hungry teams. They recognize the value that Josh Rosen presents compared to this year's quarterback to be able to get him for a possible second-round pick versus these guys who we're talking about in the first round. Clearly, seems to be a better player, at least a more accomplished college player. I think the Redskins, that's probably the best move for them.
I think it's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a no-brainer. You know, it's a great deal for them, for the Cardinals.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, it's a great deal for the Redskins, if you believe in Josh Rosen. I mean, so now, if you're the Redskins, think about this for a second. Now you don't have to do a deal with the Broncos or anything to move up. As long as you like, Josh Rosen more than Drew Locke. I mean, as long as you like him more than Dwayne Haskins, and nobody's really worried about Kyler Murray and Daniel Jones. I mean, who else really is there in the first round?
That's it.
So if you're the Redskins, this is to me a kind of a no-brainer.
It feels like it.
Doesn't it?
We talked about this weeks and weeks ago. It just feels...
What's the downside?
I haven't seen enough awful quarterback play from Josh Rosen, separate from play calling, inconsistent coordination, poor talent around him. But him as a quarterback, I haven't seen enough awful quarterback play to make me think that he does not deserve to be drafted ahead of Haskins and Locke.
So what the Broncos have to do, they have to hope, if they really want to get value, they have to hope that the Redskins actually don't love Josh Rosen, that they actually love Drew Locke or Haskins or whoever. And that's why you bring them all in here. It's a game. But at the end of the day, most of the mocks that I see, it's by far the auto draft way to go is Devin White.
Mm-hmm.
That's a no-brainer. That's picking Bradley Chubb all over again. Nothing to think about. If Devin White's there, he's the right type of athlete, You have the right type of need. Nothing to think about. Not really. If you can't trade back. And I've been thinking about this just a ton because I know the Broncos need offensive weapons. But if you're just like, everybody's like TJ Hockenson at 10. So I've been like looking at tape of tight ends. That to me would be a ridiculous pick.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? How so?
Well, because there's so many other tight ends that can accomplish things. And when I watch tape of Iowa, you don't do any Big Ten games, do you?
I did Iowa, Nebraska.
Well, okay.
I saw both Hockenson and Noah Fant.
Sorry. So.
I do every college game ever played.
I understand. You know a lot more about these college guys than I do. But when I'm looking at stuff with Hockenson, I'm seeing so much space. Like every time he seems to be catching a ball, Chad, it seems like there's 8 to 10 yards of open space around him. Can you explain that to me?
Their base formation was a two tight end formation because they had two great tight ends. So therefore, they ran the ball pretty effectively. And their ability to go with the play action and get either one of those tight ends into wide open situations, that's why you saw that on tape, is because the play action game. They're both good blockers, more than capable blockers, much right. better than... Julius Thomas wouldn't even be a comparison because Julius Thomas didn't block. These guys actually put their face in there and get dirty, and they can block. So because they are such a good run team, because these guys were such dedicated blockers, it opened up the play-action game, made it so easy for those guys to get wide-open shots, particularly going down the middle of the field. Linebackers step up in coverage. I mean, step up to deal with the run. Now those guys are right behind.
All right, well, let me play this game with you then. What's a bigger separation? Devin White to Mac Wilson at Alabama. First of all, just what is that separation from Devin White to Mac Wilson?
It's pretty significant.
Significant.
If we're going to put it in, you say you play 60 defensive snaps, it's 8 to 10 snaps of better production.
So if we're just using a scale, just for the sake of argument here, and 10 is just the most separation you can, and 0 is like hardly any separation, what number would you give the degree of separation between Devin White and Mac Wilson?
3.
3?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So not huge, but something.
Yeah,
okay.
8 to 10 plays.
What is the degree of separation between, and I don't know if you've watched this kid that much, do you know Kahale Waring out of San Diego State?
I do not.
Okay. Do you know Irv Smith Jr. out of Alabama?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the degree of separation between Hockenson and Irv Smith Jr.?
Oh, wow. Probably 3.
Around the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would urge you, by the way, to look at this Kahale Waring out of San Diego State. Now, he doesn't have the big breakaway speed, but he is your classic athlete basketball player who's playing football. He's 6'6" and change. He's got great hands. He's got biceps like a Greek god. He runs a 4.5 or something 40. And he's getting better and better at the blocking aspect. He's not reluctant to it. He's just a little bit later to football. And at San Diego State, they didn't ask him to do all that much of it. He only caught 3 touchdown passes, but he led San Diego State in total receptions by 9 passes. So they go to him early and often.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I like this Waring guy more than Hockenson, and I'm not saying Hockenson isn't great, but in order to get Hockenson, you got to use a first round pick.
Right.
The reason why I like this better, I don't think the degree of separation between the two is all that big, especially considering NFL style of tight ends where you don't have nearly the space that you do in college. And to me, a bigger body, athlete, hands, that to me is a third down machine, a red zone machine. You know, I love the way Travis Kelce can just run away from people. I mean, that is amazing. But to me, that's unicorn type of things. It's like too much to expect out of a tight end. And it's not why you get a tight end in the first place. If it happens, I mean, awesome. But you've got to be able to catch the ball without much separation in tight spaces. And then just get whatever yards you can after that. So to me, Hockenson, listen, I'm not saying he's not talented. And Fant and Smith, they are talented. But what are you going to have to give up if you're the Broncos to get that? And to me, you're going to have to give up an inside linebacker. You'd have to give up maybe a starting center in Garrett Bradbury. And you may have to give up a wide receiver threat like N'Keal Harry. And to me, just that just does not seem worth it to take a tight end at 10.
I hear what you're saying, but if you are going to draft any tight end in the top 15, I think he's got to be an integral piece of what you're doing going forward.
He's got to be a superstar.
He doesn't have to be a superstar, but he needs to be a huge
top 15.
Piece.
Who was the last tight end drafted in the top 15? Eric Ebron.
Yeah, and he didn't get really going until this last year. He sucked for his first couple years of his career.
Is he going to be a superstar?
No.
So, right.
But you have to be willing to make this player an essential part of your offense. Not 40 catches, but 70 catches, 80 catches. He has to be a big part of what you're doing. Hockenson comes into the league with that skill set. This Kalele Warren, how do you say, how are we saying his name?
You were good on the first name, Waring, yeah.
Okay, Waring. He sounds a lot like more of a project. So, yeah.
He's definitely a project.
So, if you're going to...
But we're using a third-round pick on him.
Right. So, if you're going to have the tight end as a guy who catches maybe 30 or 40 balls, or maybe you go with two tight ends and both of them get 25, 30 balls, then, yeah, this guy maybe can fill that role.
And that's what you're drafting in the third round.
Right. But if you're going to go first round in tight end, yeah, you need to decide this is going to be how we operate our offense in the future.
Right. And
through this guy.
I'd rather have Devin White, you know, with that number 10 pick if he falls, if Tampa Bay passes. The whole thing is, if Tampa Bay does take Devin White, what do you do? Are you really going to take a quarterback? Chad, if the Broncos draft a quarterback this year, I am just going to laugh my butt off. And there's plenty of reasons why you should do it. Just like there were plenty of reasons last year why you should have done it. It's not going to be a bad pick. It will be contradictory to everything you've done in this offseason.
Right.
But then again, the Broncos for the past few years have not been able to sync up philosophically their free agency and drafts, have they?
No.
So if it happens and I'm wrong about this smokescreen, then, you know, it's okay. It's cool. They do all sorts of things that don't make sense when you're trying to, you know, put a plan together. This is why the Broncos are the Broncos right now, because they don't have an overall philosophy that they've stuck to. I think I know where they're going, and it certainly wouldn't be drafting Drew Lock. By the way, hey, Drew, how you doing? I'm glad you're here. It's a nice day. Can you look out to the west? That is the west.
We'll see easy. You when you come on.
Drew, it's so games. Easy. Right. Maybe you get up to Idaho Springs if your team flies in on like a Friday or Saturday or something. I mean, Kyler Murray's coming here?
Yep.
Dwayne Haskins is coming here? Really? I mean, you know... Where do you take Dwayne Haskins? The Starbucks in Arapahoe and Peoria? Do you just, like, say... I mean, do you just eat at that restaurant, like, you know, right at Centennial Airport? You know what I mean? The landing? The perfect landing? That place is cool, by the way, perfect landing.
Well, if you're going to do the smokescreen, I think you have to follow through with the entire smokescreen. You can't
But
just...
you're not going to drive all the way down Arapahoe Road to the tech center, are you? I mean, you're not going to go that far.
I think John's got it. He's got it.
Okay. Well, it's good to have you here.
Thanks, man.
I find these conversations hysterical and fun, and I think Mike Heaven's head is about to explode. Which, again,
that's not new
for me, is entertaining. This is The Drive on The Fan.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Sports Radio 104.3 Fan. It's D-Mac with Chad Brown and Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah,
I know we're supposed to be focused on Drew Lock, but what do you think is going on with Dwayne Haskins, by the way. Why do you think things are going down a little bit?
I think if you do a deep dive, you know, you look at the talent level at Ohio State. You look at the number of short passes that he threw that ended up, you know, being long games based on what the receiver did once he had the ball in his hands. It inflated his stats. You look at that midseason slump that I talked about earlier where his footwork kind of fell apart. And then if I was a scout, I would really watch a player's worst game and begin to get a feel of when things aren't going well, where does this player's fundamentals break down? Where does his, you know, as a quarterback, his progressions break down? Because I saw a quarterback who just didn't look very good. Now, I watched games before that Purdue game so I could prepare to call that game where, you know, he was a much better quarterback. But again, against the Purdue defense.
What did Purdue do that was so special?
I don't think it was anything particular.
Okay.
They did a 3-3, you know, which is a pretty prominent defense in college football. Three defensive linemen, three linebackers, the rest five defensive backs. It wasn't anything complicated that they did.
Okay.
They didn't put a tremendous amount of pressure on them. Ohio State was able to run the ball, not super effectively, but they ran the ball consistently. So the play-action game was certainly an option.
Shouldn't you be able to run the ball a little bit better? And typically, shouldn't there be a little bit more?
Yeah, because you're light in the box.
Right.
Now, Purdue had a pretty good safety who was coming up making some plays. Okay. But I just didn't see a guy who warranted the hype that he was getting going into that game. And now we're talking about the draft. I didn't see a guy in that game who warrants a possible top five pick. Now I'm looking at Walter Football. I don't think they even have him in the top 10 right now.
Haskins, no. Yeah, Walter, I love WalterFootball.com, and they are ruthless. If things are falling apart, they move quickly, and they dump guys quickly. And they're not beholden to what they may have said even a week ago, and they'll just run that right up until the moment. And they talk to people. You know, some people that do mocks, like Mel, I was told Mel Kiper, Chad, doesn't talk to anybody. Like, he just literally does his mock draft based on his own evaluation of a team needs, and his evaluation of the college players.
Great for him.
I guess. He gets paid.
Name somebody else who's turned himself into an institution based on the NFL draft. That's amazing.
It is amazing, and he's done a great job with it. To me, it's a bit of an arrogant process because it doesn't take a whole heck of a lot to try to pick up the phone and, you know, really try to get yourself some knowledge, although then you're sort of prone to be fooled and,
right,
you know, be used. And yeah, so when I see McShay mocking Drew Locke, I'm like, they're using you, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You are getting used.
So,
but Walter Football, they almost everything they do is like talking to, you know, people when they're doing their evaluations.
Like, I think it was last week I was on the show with Zach, looking at the exact same mock draft on Walter Football by Charlie Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the Broncos taking Drew Locke number 10. Now it says General Broncos Ed Oliver.
Mm.
And the first line is, my good friend Cecil Lammy.
No, it is not.
Of 104.3 The
it
Fan in Denver.
Say that.
Has heard that John Elway is not sold on Drew Locke yet.
Does it really say that?
That could change during the pre-draft visit, but Cecil believes that Devin White and Ed Oliver are more likely to become the Broncos' pick.
Wow, Cecil.
Getting a shout-out from his boy Charlie Campbell.
Dang.
On Walter Football.
Wow.
So, does that make you feel more confident about Walter Football, or
well,
less confident?
Actually, yeah. Because, wait, what does it say about Cecil again? Read that to me again.
My good friend Cecil Lammy of 104.3 The Fan in Denver,
yeah,
has heard that John Elway is not sold on Drew Locke yet.
Okay.
That could change during the pre-draft visit, which is happening today. They're at a Starbucks over there,
right,
by Dove Valley. But Cecil believes that Devin White and Ed Oliver are more likely to be the Broncos' pick. Stay tuned. A lot could change in the next few weeks.
Well, all that is very true. John Elway, Chad, is greatly influenced. I think he changes his mind quite often. I don't think he makes his mind up until the very last minute. And I think often he's influenced by, like, some of the last things that sort of occur with him.
Mm-hmm.
So Drew Locke's a big, tall dude. He seems like a friendly guy. Huh. If he comes in and has a really great interview, I don't know. It could happen.
Okay.
For sure.
I talked about this with Zach.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it could happen.
I talked about this with Zach last week. At every one of my internships, At some point, you're preparing for the preseason games.
Your internships with NFL teams.
With NFL teams.
You weren't interning at Starbucks.
No.
Okay.
Or King Soopers.
All right.
They denied me. I didn't have enough bagging credits.
Yeah.
So at any rate, doing these internships with the Jets, with the Titans, with the Seahawks, you're preparing for a preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
And all the coaches are in the defensive staff meeting. And the preseason game is on because your game's on Friday and now it's Thursday night. So there's a bunch of preseason games on. And at some point, you know, you guys are doing the game plan, blah, 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 blah. And somebody looks up and goes, oh, man, that's that play was by Devin White. I love that kid. So every coach has some kid as they look up from their paperwork and game planning and they look up at the TV screen. And they say, well, I love that kid. Well, that kid was great. I wish we would have got that kid. But there is a difference between liking a kid as a prospect, liking a kid personally, and them being the right fit for your team. So if what you're saying is true, and I know you're kind of just paraphrasing a little bit about John Elway, and oh, wow, Drew Locke's tall, and Drew Locke was really nice, and he said some great things about a pass I threw him back in 89, back in 98. Hopefully he's not influenced by that because you can like a kid. You can like the prospect. You can think he's going to be a great player, but he's not the right fit for where your football team is.
Yeah.
So, again, all three of my stops, every coach had some guy in every single game we watched that they absolutely loved but was not on their team.
Well,
you can love a player.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's right for you.
We welcome Drew Locke here. I more or less agree with that analysis that – What that analysis is basically saying is maybe they're not as high of Drew Locke. It could change after today, and there may be many more things that change in terms of the Broncos. All of that, I think, is true, Chad.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are a long way from the Broncos setting anything in cement. When we get to football at 4, the rumors about Josh Rosen, could he be going now for a first rounder and how that impacts the Broncos. But when we come back, Patrick Saunders, we got to shake the trees about the Rockies. What is going on? We'll dig into it next.
First pitch to Julio Urias is into right field, a base hit. That drives in a run, and it's 2-0 LA. Oh, as was wow. That swing by Cody Bellinger. Santa Maria. Oh, goodness. Max Muncy on the first pitch he sees deposits it into right field. And the route is on tonight.
Ugh, what a miserable start. Patrick Saunders joins us, and Patrick writes for the Denver Post about the Rockies, and talk about a glutton for punishment. I think I was following you on Twitter. You sat in the stands last night, not even the press box? Were you with your family or something?
I had the day off and took my wife and some relatives and some friends to the game. You know, I don't know why I... to go to a Rockies game after covering for about 7 weeks solid here.
That is amazing. By the way, that is amazing you did that. Like, your wife is...
fun.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I mean, I don't get to be a fan very often. And I'm still not a fan. I mean, I don't cheer or anything. But it's fun to take in the ambiance of the ballpark and stuff when you're not on deadline and, you know. So, it's a different point of view.
Okay. But I'm not going to try to tell you how to do your job, but, you know, you can... You're allowed to leave the press box, maybe wander around in the stands for 3 or 4 innings and come back, Patrick. You know, you can do that.
Well, you can, but given the day and age we live in with Twitter and deadlines and everything else, you're basically strapped to your chair the whole time.
So. I don't know. I'm seeing Buster, he's down in the camera well, and there's Spilly up on catwalks, and there's Drew Goodman sometimes out in the dinner area out in right field. I don't know. You could probably
a little different job than what I do.
Oh, all right. Anyways, enough about you. Let's talk about the Rockies.
Okay.
Degree of worry here. 10 being, 0 being it's a marathon, not a sprint. Where are we?
I'm closer to and I'll tell you why. Because all winter long, all during the off season, after we saw how the team performed offensively last year and certainly during the playoffs against the Brewers, the one thing this team needed to do was be more productive on offense, be more consistent. It was the theme throughout spring training, and they have bombed in that regard. And now you have Daniel Murphy out, you have David Dahl out, You have guys, you know, hitting around below the Mendoza line. I don't think the approach has been very good. And I know the Rockies are, you know, they get very defensive about you guys are, you know, jumping off the bandwagon and you don't know what it's like and it's too early. I get all that. It is too early. They could go on a five-game tear here and we'd all be, you know, all be just saying, oh, well, I guess we were wrong. But they are not a good team right now. And last night's exhibition of baseball was flat terrible. Let's face it. I don't think you can dismiss how poorly they have performed so far.
All right, Patrick. I like the fact that you watch the game from the stands. I've always enjoyed looking at the game from different perspectives.
Sometimes, I'm fine that he did it. I just can't believe he went to a baseball game when it was like one night off.
When you love baseball, you do what Patrick did. I give Patrick credit for it. It illustrates his true love of the game. He was not getting paid. He just wanted to take in a game. I'm with you 100% on that, Patrick. So,
well, you wouldn't, and believe me, I got a, not that anybody in the stands where I was sitting knew where I was, but I listened intently to some of the fans, and the comments were not suitable for a family publication. Let's put it that way.
Right. That's also smart.
Yeah, and those are people who pay really good hard-earned money.
That's true.
To see the games and to get their point of view once in a while is kind of a good thing.
Okay, so if you want to lose your incognito-ness while you were sitting in the stands, what would you have said to those people to calm their fears? I mean, 7 of 8, the issues offensively from last season now begin to plague them again this year. What's the fix? How do you calm those fans' fears?
I would tell them that at least you have Kyle Freeland and Aramon Marquez coming up against the Braves.
There you go.
I would tell them that Nolan Arenado is going to start hitting home runs at some point. I would tell them that Charlie Blackmon is not going to be as bad in right field as he was last night. Cross your fingers. And I would tell them that some of the young talent, Ryan McMahon included, I think given time, will be much better and will be productive. On the downside, I would tell them that the Dodgers right now look almost unbeatable in the NL West. I know they're on a hot streak that is almost unprecedented, but right now they look like the 27 Yankees.
I mean, they look great.
They are just, they're great on the mound. Their firepower is unbelievable.
It's relentless.
They don't give you a breath.
Yeah.
You know, they own the Rockies. They own the Rockies.
Yeah, maybe they can forget how many outs there are in the inning more often. That would help us.
Yeah.
By the way, so just, you know, listen, I understand Major League Baseball does things on levels that are way higher than lower levels.
Right.
But here's one. And I know Trevor Story's fast, but let me give you this. When you're down by 7 runs, I do believe the only way to get back into a game, Patrick, is to go base to base. And just hope you string that train together. So when I saw Trevor Story getting thrown out to make the third out, down 7, I screamed. I mean, I just could not believe what I was seeing. And to me, this is a bigger problem.
It happened to Charlie, too, didn't it?
It happened to Charlie Blackmon as well. He got thrown out of the plate. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, you don't need that. We're down 1 million runs. Just calm down a little bit. Never mind by the way, they were brutal on Desmond. Alex Rodriguez killed Ian Desmond on TV last night. Killed him.
Well, let's take the first point. I think you're exactly right. I know that the Rockies have preached aggressive base running all year. It's what they want. But aggressive base running in game situations like that,
not down 7
is not smart, right? It's just not smart.
Doesn't make sense. If you're up by 4 and you're going to take a chance, I'm fine with that. You know, that's A-okay. Down 7?
Yeah, I was scratching my head a little bit on that. I was sitting in the stands and I groaned and everybody's like, what are you so upset about? I'm like, never mind. But then, regarding Ian, you know, guys, boy, 5 years, $70 million, and what they're getting right now. You know, the thing that concerns me about Ian, you know, his play in center field has been okay. He's had a couple gaffes out there.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, at the plate, he looks late. In other words, he looks like he can't catch up to fastballs. He's either swinging through them or he's fouling them off. And then he gets down in the count and he makes himself so vulnerable to breaking stuff because he's always behind in the count. And we've seen already too many times this year, Ian has chopped the ball into the ground, which was his Achilles heel last year when he led the Rockies in double plays. And I think he led all the majors in ground ball outs. Ian tweaked his swing, the idea of getting more loft, all of that stuff. Boy, it's not translating yet, is it?
He's hitting what,
080, 090 something? Yeah, it's really ugly right now.
And I think A-Rod and Jessica Mendoza, I actually think they do a great job. And they were just telling the truth. And I appreciate them for doing it because it's somebody aside from us nerds who is like breaking down the mental aspect of the game. And I think they're hitting the nail on the head. And I know you're stuck with Ian Desmond. Like, sending him down just isn't much of an option, but you can't. I don't know. All right, really quick, really, really quick, really quick. David Dahl injury is what?
Well, it's something oblique. We don't know the extent and how long it's going to be out. That is always a tricky thing to diagnose. You know, I remember when Michael Kodire had it, and he missed a better part of 2 months.
Don't even tell me that. Are you really?
Well, I'm just saying that was Michael Kodire, an older guy, and he really messed his up. David said he thinks it was fairly minor. He didn't think there's anything that's gonna. But
you're freaking me out.
You guys hitting right now. Well, I'm just telling you, an oblique on a baseball player.
That's tough.
You guys, as Chad would know.
That's tough.
I mean, Chad's a pro athlete. He knows an oblique. You know the sides and the twisting. I mean, it's something that guys, if they get bad, they can't sleep at night.
You know what? I got to say goodbye to you. You're depressing the crap out of me. It's,
all right.
I love you, but we got to run. And McMahon's, is he going to be okay?
Well, he's a sprained elbow. That takes a little time, too. So,
guys, Lord.
You know what? Piling on now. Maybe the baseball dogs will smile on him later.
Okay. All right. I love you, Patrick.
Okay.
Go sit in the stands again.
Okay.
Todd Helton has a hamburger shack out there. You should go check it out.
Patrick, the dark cloud. How about that?
If they lose Dahl for up to 2-3 months, that's...
Obliques don't heal very fast, man. They don't.
Football at 4 is next.